The Fancy Film Fellows employs a frank discussion of cinema that includes adult language and descriptions of mature situations. We have no concern for spoilers, so be warned, you might learn more than you'd care to know.
You should see these places. I mean, there's a whole world outside of books and maps. Do you want to?
How? Every door is guarded.
Who said anything about a door?
What are you doing?
Sometimes, princess, sometimes you just have to take a risk.
Seen, unseen. Hey everybody, it's another Fancy Film Fellows podcast. Doing another Seen, Unseen, and I'm sitting down with a guest. One of us has seen the movie, the other one has not. In this case, I'm going to be the one that is unseen, and my guest is Rio. Rio, do you want to introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
You can say my last name, that's allowed.
Okay, I mean,
my name is Rio Townsend. I'm a very talented, well-rounded individual. Some would say a Renaissance woman, jack of all trades, master of none, but I'm really good at a lot of things.
Absolutely. The last one we had was all industry talk because it was just me and Alicia being like, yeah, we worked on movies together.
I can totally do a little bit of that talk. Anywhere near as informed,
yeah. I would imagine. You've done some acting. You were in one of my movies.
Yeah, I'm on IMDb.
Yeah. one of my student films from UAB. Yeah, the movie we're talking about today is Aladdin, and you have seen it.
I have.
I have not. So I am going to start here, I don't know if I said, it's Aladdin, obviously from 2019, directed by Guy Ritchie. It's the re-upped Aladdin from the...
live action.
Yeah, the live action re-upped Aladdin in the... the style that Disney is doing now with all of their animated movies, just remaking
money,
all
money,
of them.
Money.
Yeah, basically. So I'm the unseen in this case, so I'm going to give sort of my first impressions, having seen the trailer and having seen a little bit of it. I now like work at a movie theater, so I see a little bit of it when I come in at the end of the movies to clean up in the theaters. So I've seen the dance number at the end.
It's cute.
it's a good time. It looks like a good time. but I actually have a pretty negative view of this movie based on the trailers. I don't think the trailers make it look very good at all. Like, the visuals don't look good. They look all very like processed and CG, and like everything was shot on a green screen. I can't speak to how much of it actually was, but it seems like it was a lot. I generally don't like the design choices that they made from what I can see in the trailer.
Design, like character design, like,
well, like I would say like costuming, yeah. And also like the more expanded things, like the some of the characters are completely CG. So like Abu is like a CG monkey now, and we've got the tiger whose name I forget.
Raja.
Raja, that's right. Raja is a CG tiger, and Iago is a CG parrot now, and
a macaw.
I'm sorry, not a
just,
parrot, a
just macaw. To be pedantic,
yeah. how dare I misspecies the macaw like that. How rude of me, sorry. But yeah, I just also from reaction that I've seen online, I don't feel like this movie has anything to offer me anyway. I also genuinely don't, I'm just not feeling the casting of Will Smith as the genie for whatever reason. Like that, I think it's maybe just because, I don't know, my idea of that character is based on the original that Robin Williams did that was written specifically for Robin Williams. And it's just, I don't know, it's hard to go from...
Yeah, they wrote in, like, they just let him talk and they would write it into the script. Yeah.
And that to me, like, taking a character that was specifically written for somebody else and then just, like, shoehorning it into the style of a completely different actor, I don't ever feel like that works. Like, I don't feel like it gels completely.
Did you have any suggestions for the...
For who could do it? I mean... Gosh. I mean, there's a bigger can of worms to open there because, I mean, my overall suggestion, and this is like to, I guess, a bigger point, is that I am like sick and tired of Disney's like re-upping
just don't
of their
make
IPs.
It.
Yeah, like, I don't make a live-action Aladdin movie. Like, that's my suggestion. Don't do it. But I also just don't think that they made good design choices with the genie in particular. Like,
well, we all somebody, know that first I mean, teaser.
Yeah, somebody said that Will Smith,
it mortified the world.
Yeah, it looked like he had a poop coming out of his head. And I was like, they're not wrong. He does kind of look like he has a poop coming out of his head.
Okay.
But yeah, that's my... you know, my unfounded opinion based on what little I know. What do you think about the movie, having actually seen it?
Before I talk about this movie, I'm curious about your thoughts on the original animated Aladdin from 1990,
you know,
whatever.
Yeah, I think it was it 92?
I think it's 92.
Yeah. I have fond memories of it, and specifically of Robin Williams' performance as the genie. Like, it was, I guess, my introduction to Robin Williams, because I didn't really know who Robin Williams was when I was, what was I, like, God, seven years old. I didn't really have a concept of who Robin Williams was, but that style, like, appealed to me as, like, a hyperactive seven-year-old. I was like, yeah, he talks really fast, and he says lots of funny stuff. I don't understand all of it, but, like... Some of it's really good, and
it was full of anachronisms.
It really was. It was full of references to a lot of different things, and he crosses a lot of styles really quickly. And it's actually funny, kind of picking that performance apart now, just like knowing all of the references he makes with
recognizing the actors or the
where you're like, oh, he's doing Groucho Marx,
yeah.
Oh, he's doing Jack Nicholson, oh, he's, you know, he's doing this, that, and wow.
I got Rodney Dangerfield when I was little. You wouldn't, because of that that movie where he was a dog. It was like a Bluth movie.
I don't know. Rover Dangerfield.
So I knew Rodney Dangerfield from that movie specifically.
Wow.
By the time that I got to really watch Aladdin multiple times.
Wow, what a pull. Rover Dangerfield. That's pretty good. We had another like deep pull in the other podcast too. We were talking, saying something about aliens, and Alicia mentioned something about an Eddie Murphy movie where he's like an alien inside
Pluto
a guy's
Mars
head. No, where he's an alien inside the guy's head. I think it's called Meet Dave.
Oh my gosh. Oh, was he a robot or an alien?
I can't remember.
I think he might have been like android
like a big robot that he controlled from the inside. But yeah, like the
that weird, was a weird movie too.
Yeah, we've gotten into some weird deep pulls in these scene on scenes so far. But yeah, that performance really like bolsters that movie from when it starts to, because the rest of it is, you know, it's kind of tried and true, like, boy meets a princess and like aspires to something greater. And, you know, the whole like diamond in the rough is basically the like hero's journey archetype of like someone who wants to be more than what they are. And
Or really is more than what they seem.
Yeah, in what, that case, yeah. I guess, yeah. But I mean, like, Aladdin definitely, like,
riff-raff street rat.
Yeah, he definitely wants to live in the palace. Like, he's got those ambitions.
So I will say the probably not what anyone else would consider the best part of this remake is that they included that little refrain of riff-raff street rat. I don't buy that, if only they look closer. Because that's, like, my favorite part of the whole animated film, and it's such a small part, and knowing with these new releases where they're adding in new original songs and things like that, I just really didn't anticipate being able to see that, and so I thought that was really cool. But yeah, Aladdin's one of my top 90s Disney films. It would probably be second behind The Lion King. The other day I was thinking about this and I was like, probably because those were the only brown people that existed in the world of Disney for me at the time. I never saw Peter Pan and their racist natives and stuff. I never really saw that movie. So I hadn't seen any brown people in Disney stuff before Aladdin, really.
It's very funny that you bring that up, though, because I was watching an interview where Will Smith interviewed Naomi Scott and Mina Massoud about the movie, and that was exactly what Naomi Scott said about Jasmine. She was like, she was the only princess who looked like me. And I was like, fair. That's a fair point. Like, representation was extremely threadbare at that point, and, you know, it's gotten maybe a little better, but not by much. So
not by much. And it's better in the sense of you know, where businesses are concerned about their social responsibilities, but not necessarily because of their own personal ethics, but because the social responsibilities obviously play a part in their success at this point. Like, yeah, there's enough people who are vocal enough, and the transfer of information is so much larger and quicker that even if it wasn't a huge number of people looking for more diverse representation, which it is, people would still have a very large voice just because the internet, that has completely changed the way that companies interact with the people who patron them.
Yeah, and boy, on that point, not to be too topical, but it was actually announced today that YouTube's deplatforming a lot of Nazis and hate speech people on their platform. So that was mainly because of outrage on the internet. So I guess, well done. It's yet to be seen how that's going to be implemented specifically, but I believe there was an inciting incident with some, popular, I say that with air quotes, popular YouTube personality who was like being extremely homophobic to someone. And they did something about it. So something got done thanks to that outrage.
I'm not going to invest too much hope in it, because you still got people. I mean, someone who's extremely internet famous and popular, Jeffree Star, been racist his entire career, co-opted black culture, as a lot of white gay men do. He's still making all his money. He's still got all his makeup, and people are still asking him for his opinion on other, you know, internet people or other makeup people or whatever. You know, any step is a good step, you know, and we have to take incremental wins sometimes. But yeah, I'm not super optimistic about YouTube somehow becoming some magical place where hate speech doesn't find its way in.
For sure. I think anywhere that capitalism reigns, it'll always have a back door in, because it's at the end of the day.
I don't see ads anymore and stuff, because I've been paying for the YouTube whatever, because I use YouTube Music. And also so that, like, when I close out of YouTube, if it's not open on my screen, my stuff still plays. Those are the only reasons I use it. But I've been paying for it for like 2 years now, and so I don't know what's being advertised on YouTube. I don't know what kind of stuff is linked to what type of content. So that's like a whole part of the conversation that I can't even
I know that there were like a lot of extremely like homophobic organizations like throwing ads up there for a while. I guess just like bombarding whoever would watch them with them. And like, I definitely like reported a few of them when I saw them. I was like, oh, get this garbage out of here.
Well, and it's sad because of course we know that content creators don't have direct control over what advertising goes with their.
And I mean, you know, to not to harp on this too much, but like they also deplatform and demonetize a lot of, you know, good content creators because they're, you know, their stances are controversial in the mainstream, as it were. And it's like, well, you know, those voices are being silenced as well.
Well, they also do it when large companies say you can't use this footage or this audio clip or whatever, though obviously fair use covers a lot. It's a video that's supposed to be informative or whatever the case may be. But of course, a lot of small content creators are not going to have the money or the time to challenge stuff like that. So,
yeah. Well, we've
rabbit hole.
We have done it. We've sufficiently got off topic. you talked a little bit about YouTube Music, and I want to go back to the music in Aladdin because I think this is maybe, besides Robin Williams, the other star of Aladdin, the 1992 Aladdin, Disney's Aladdin, as it were. Alan Menken's music for this movie is, you know, iconic. And even, you know, like listening to the songs at the end when I'm like cleaning the theater, I'm like, yeah, these songs are great. Like they're really good. Although I quibble with A Friend Like Me because I think it's a, you know, kind of a pale imitation of its original self.
A Friend Like Me does not exist well without the imagery that's happening on screen during the sequence.
Makes sense.
I wouldn't say that it's like vastly improved with the video, but at least then you have some context for instance, the whole thing. He doesn't know his name is Aladdin. They don't do the, you know, because that was a big thing with the microphone and the marquee, Din and da 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 da. So they didn't try to recreate that moment or anything. So for the majority of the song, the genie doesn't actually know what Aladdin's name is, and that's used as a joke. And so hearing it play in the end credits with him being like, huh, "What's your name?" It just sounds real bizarre. But you know, it makes a little bit more sense again in the context of the actual visuals. And I think that for that particular song, they were working really hard to stay away from controversy with some of the imagery and whatnot that was in the original version, you know, the sexy dancing ladies, pretending to be like, you know, he had that accent when they were at the barbershop, he had an accent as the major D and all of this stuff. And so I think that they were just really scared of stepping into something. And so they completely reimagined it essentially. I think that visually it works pretty good. I don't personally like the joke of him not knowing Aladdin's name. I don't think that it's necessary. I don't think it really adds anything, but the sequence itself is, I mean, it's fun. I should also say that when I watched this movie, the entire time I watched this movie, I was real pissed off at someone completely unrelated to anything, and so it might have also influenced my mood and how maybe critical I was of certain aspects of it, because I was just like rage texting several times throughout the film, and so I wasn't actually looking at it. That's part of why I missed the initial traipse into the cave at the very beginning, because I was out in the lobby rage texting.
Now, do they do, is it pretty much beat for beat the same story as the original Aladdin?
It basically is. And it was really funny to me. I take my mother to the movies. When I go to the movies, I've been doing it for years now. I had moved out and it was the only time I would see her, and she's got some mobility issues and stuff. And so in the past it was a way to get her out of the house, but now it's just something that we do. So just for context, that's why I was there with my now 60-year-old mother. So she was so surprised by so many things that were happening in the film. And I'm like, that's just, so it's just the story of Aladdin. Like, that's just what happens. Like, don't you remember? Like, yeah, he gets trapped in the cave. Yeah. Like,
she was like, oh no,
he gets thrown into the water. So like that one, I was surprised made it into their cut, that they found a way to work in when Jafar, you know, outs him or whatever, yeah, and tries to drown him. I figured they'd find a way to gloss over that, just because it seemed, not that it was like complicated, but that based on the, you know, the scope of this one, which is going to be much more like, look at all this stuff we can put on screen, it wouldn't be necessary, but it was in there. And so that was interesting. But if you watch the movie, I think you'll be less disappointed with the design. I don't know how much less disappointed, but I do think that you'll be less disappointed when you actually get to see it, because for one thing, the you know, when they did have actual sets, they were very pretty.
Okay.
So a lot of it did happen with set pieces. Like, I wasn't watching that hard to see, you know, how much was a set piece and how much was a backdrop or green screen, etc. But there were a lot of physical elements that I thought were pretty. And the most, I want to say, ridiculous part of the movie was the, I guess you call her the lady in waiting. Her entire persona, her entire existence was unnecessary. It was to give Jeannie another motivating factor in his life besides the concept of freedom, which, you know, in general, one would think would be pretty, that's pretty fulfilling. Like, yeah, just seeking freedom. You've been stuck inside, you know, your itty bitty living space. But there's a romance angle there, which I just wasn't personally a fan of. And also,
now the lady in waiting, is that a character from the original Aladdin? Is this a new
She is made up. She is a she's a, you know, on the one hand, she's supposed to be a foil to Jasmine, of course, because, you know, the whole opening sequence of Jasmine being in the marketplace, being mistaken by Aladdin for a person from the palace, but, you know, still a servant, like still obviously not the princess and stuff. So there's even a whole, you know, body swap thing that happens for like 2 seconds, where he thinks that the lady in waiting is the princess and da 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 da. So really, I feel like that was mostly what she existed for, outside of that random romantic angle for the immortal magical creature. You know, whatever.
Yeah, I'll just throw in another love story. Why not?
Just like, I don't know. It wasn't the worst thing ever. It just was so weird and random. The reason I'm okay with Will Smith's casting specifically is because if you look at Aladdin the musical, it's the genie's always been played by a black man.
Okay.
Usually a big old fat black man.
Okay. I haven't ever seen any of the, like, Disney, like, Broadway musicals, so I'm unfamiliar with the casting in those.
So they created a new persona for Genie through the musicals that is, I mean, it's still Robin Williams-esque. It's still a very highly comedic character. It's still a very anachronistic character. I'm sorry, they're, look at them.
Oh, yeah.
They are loving each other over there.
It's bath time.
But, you know, what's his name? You know, he's won Tonys. He does voice acting. He's like the original Broadway Aladdin genie.
Okay. That, yeah, that's interesting, because that maybe changes my opinion about, I guess, like, the genie and how he is portrayed, because I guess everything that I'm thinking is going back to the original animated film. And obviously, you know, if you're going to do it live action, there's going to have to be a lot of changes, obviously, especially if you're doing it live like that on Broadway, that would make sense to give him kind of a different, I don't know, physicality, because the I mean, the the Robin Williams physicality is just, it's all over the place. It's stretchy, and it's, you know, it's made for that cartoon world like that, which, you know, a lot of Aladdin is. I always thought it was weird, though, like, why Genie actually still kind of has powers, mm-hmm. even after he gets freed in the original one. Because I'm like...
Oh, you mean like from the TV show and stuff? Well, he does it a little bit at the end of the movie.
A little bit at the end of the movie. He, like, you know, he says, I'm going to go travel the world or whatever. And, you know, he just like blasts off like he blasts off like a rocket or something like that.
Yeah, he does.
And I'm like, so he can still do all that stuff, but he's just, he doesn't have to obey anyone now? That's a weird, I don't know.
Yeah.
I never considered like how weird that actually is that he just like still has his powers.
So yeah, they didn't make him, all they really took, I guess, is his immortality. Ultimately, it's probably the only caveat to the freedom. I don't know that it was explicitly explored in the animated film, but it would make sense to me that like there's a direct connection between that aspect of his power. Like maybe if he gets to keep the magic, it's because he's gonna die now. Or he's capable of dying now. Like maybe he's still one of those like, I'm immortal unless something like stabs me in the heart. You know, so he can still live forever.
He's like a lobster.
He still won't age. Yeah, just keep going until an external force. Like, so maybe he's still immortal in that sense, but now he is, you know, if you chop off his head, he's not gonna get back up. Maybe.
Does it? I forget that trying to remember the original one. It's been a very long time since I've seen it, but doesn't somebody's head get cut off at some point? Maybe that's when he's telling people he can't kill people. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and that's another part of the thing. So like his opening sequence, because of course Robin Williams did the guy who was the, you know, the narrator at the beginning as well. And that original Arabian Nights song that he sang, he says, you know, something, they'll cut off your head. It's barbaric, but hey, it's home.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's in the original cut. Yeah. And then, which if you get a version today, it won't say that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
they but yeah, he does a head-cutting thing. He's a zombie. He's like, because he can't kill people or bring them back from the dead. And, yeah. So, like, what's nice is that all of the sex is out. For me, like, I'm gonna be real. Like, as a... I don't know, 9-year-old or however what I was when I like got to see Aladdin several times. I was all about it, of course. I was like, ooh, she's in danger. He's gonna, ooh, it's a nasty. You know, like I was like, ooh, that's exciting. But looking back, I'm like, oh, you know, that might have been a bit much.
Yeah, it's for the lascivious dad. That's something Basil coined on this, on the one of our old Loose Cannons podcasts. He said that Disney put in a lot of things for lascivious dads in their movie.
Yeah, like, what is his name? In The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Oh,
I watched that last year.
Oh, Frollo.
Frollo. I was like, yeah. Jesus Christ. Oh, yeah.
The Hellfire number is something that we actually discussed on an earlier podcast.
It's beautiful, though. I mean, it's a beautiful song, though. Like, that's, I mean, that music is just...
It's just that it's a notch. Song. It's a villain song about sexual frustration.
About his lust, yes. Yeah. About not being able to act on his lust.
Boy, 90s and like, Disney was wild.
If I can't have her, she should just be dead. That's
yeah, yowza. Yeah, and yeah, of course, in that movie, you've also got a sexualized Roma
brown
woman.
Person.
Yeah, yeah. A Romani woman, yeah.
Voiced by a white woman.
Yes, that was another thing. Yeah, Ruben brought that up and he talked about that movie. Like, yeah, no, she just sounds like Demi Moore. Like,
yeah.
I know what Demi Moore sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah, she's got a real particular gravel. It's yep. pretty hard to...
Pretty unmistakable.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, he didn't turn into a giant snake, Jafar, because none of that like capture-y of Jasmine part happened. Like, okay. She wasn't in the... Or did she get in the... Was she in a...
Put her in the hourglass. That's yeah. Right, at the end of it. Yeah.
He did it in the animated one. I can't remember if that happened in the other one or not. I don't think it did. I think I'm just remembering it very vividly from the animated one because... I watched it a lot.
Yeah, I remember that now that I think about it. Like, where she's, like, disappearing below the sand. It's, like, rising.
Something similar was happening, though, because I do know that he had the... So, like, in the animated one, that's when Jafar is the giant snake.
Yeah.
And he's, like, squeezing Aladdin. And he's like, I'm going to use my street smarts and my words. I'm going to trick him into making a dumb wish.
Yeah.
And that plays out in the new one as well, in that he is somehow, like, trapped by Jafar and needs to say a bunch of stuff to make him wish to be a genie, basically.
Yeah.
But I can't remember what Jasmine's dilemma was in the moment.
Hmm. Interesting.
I don't remember at all.
Wow.
That was weird.
Were you angry texting at that point, or was it just...
No,
like,
I mean, towards the end of the movie... you know what I started to do towards the end of the movie? This is terrible. Homework.
So it's a very interesting film. Obviously, kept your attention.
Well, so it was a double feature. We do double features when we see horror films, especially. So we had seen Brightburn, and I timed it out so we could go see Aladdin right afterwards. And so it's like 11:30 at night, and because I'm doing an online class, like, my stuff's due at midnight, and I just, like, opened up the notes in my phone and started.
Nice.
Answering some questions from my homework.
That's or good whatever. Times.
And my mother was also falling asleep at that point because it was 11:30 at night.
Yeah, well, I won't rehash my thoughts from Brightburn, but I'll say if you listen to the first episode of Seen Unseen, you'll hear my and Alicia's talk about the iconography of evil Superman in that one.
My mother was hilarious in that one. She was like, oh, it is evil Superman? I was like, not technically, Mom, no, but, like, that's obviously, legally, that's the idea.
Similar to, but legally distinct from.
Exactly. Like, no, they're not saying this is an alternate universe Clark Kent. That's not what they're saying. But they're saying, what if? Yeah, she cracked me up during that one.
Man.
She's a lot during horror films. But, yeah, music was lovely. Set design was mostly lovely.
Yeah, you said they had new songs also.
They always have new songs in these new ones now. It's Jasmine. Jasmine gets songs.
Oh, okay.
Well, she gets, like, a short version of the song, and then she also gets the full version of the song.
Okay.
And it's, I think it's called Speechless. So it's about not being silent. You know, it goes, you can't keep me silent. You can't keep me quiet. Something like that. You know, all I know is I won't go speechless.
Ah.
And it's about, you know, the fact that Jasmine doesn't have a voice because, you know, she's just the princess. Jafar says it. She's supposed to be seen and not heard, basically. And you just go marry whichever prince is most politically, you know, advantageous.
Jafar says that in the original one, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. I was like, he does say something similar to that in the first one. Yeah. Yeah, that's...
Yeah, when he says something horrible to Jasmine, this is another thing I remember about, like, I'm sorry, the sexuality of the animated one. She has, like, this heaving bosom when Jafar says something to her, and it's like... It's supposed to be that, like, she's, like, just breathing so deeply, but, of course, you know, the outfit that they have her in.
Yeah.
I'm like, all I was doing was looking at her boobies.
Yeah.
Like...
I feel like, was Jasmine the first Disney princess to have cleavage? Because I can't remember another Disney princess before her having cleavage.
Hmm.
But I think it was her and Pocahontas were the two that I remember.
Well, the thing
cleavage.
Is that Pocahontas didn't have midriff also. So even if...
It's true.
Even if Pocahontas had cleavage, it wasn't near as provocative... Jasmine's, probably.
Honestly, like, having seen Pocahontas semi-recently, like, there's a lot of stuff in it that's pretty provocative, honestly. There's a lot of very, like, it's like, just towing that line of, like, they did it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they fucked.
Do you want to know my favorite part of that one?
Sure.
It's when John Smith jumps off the boat, and that guy goes, Smith, are you crazy? And it's Billy, whatever his name is, the voice guy.
Whatever.
You know who he is.
The voice guy.
He's the daddy in Brave, most recently, that I can think of. Billy O'Connell.
Oh, okay.
Billy O'Connell. And that's my favorite part. And we had it on VHS, and I literally would sit there and rewind it and play it over and over again, because I just thought it was the funniest line and the funniest delivery. Didn't really care about the rest of the movie. The end.
So I want to get on the topic of, I guess, like, the... Disney brand overall, because this was one of the things that, you know, I'm taking issue with more and more in general with Disney these days, is their whole approach to intellectual property.
Yeah.
And, you know, just actively like changing legislation so that they can hang on to intellectual property for longer and longer.
Well, and collecting.
Oh, well, and, yeah, yeah. And just like just buying
amassing,
other companies.
Right.
Yeah, just amassing every intellectual property in the known universe at this point. And I obviously, like, I'm sick of them just rehashing all of that stuff too. Like, that's part of what bothers me about it, is that it does mean that, like, if they wanted to, they could just rehash the stuff that people already like forever.
And it would make enough money that it was
And that's, you know, I'm like, you know, that right there is the death of art, I guess. Like, where you're just doing the same thing over and over.
I totally get it. And I think that all of this resurgence of Disney classics is completely, ultimately unnecessary. What I will say, though, is that, you know, I've been in childcare for the past like decade or so. So like that's kids are a big part of my life. And I spent a lot of time with children, most recently with children 18 months to 24 months, very, very small. And this stuff is appealing in a positive way to young people. So like if I had like a four-year-old, we'd definitely be seeing all these movies. Like, I didn't go see Dumbo. I'm like, what? Why would I want to see Dumbo? It was a sad movie. It had the racist crows, but also it was a sad movie. The majority of the movie is just really depressing. Like, I don't want to watch that again, and it looked more realistic to me. So like, but if I had a four-year-old, we would have gone to see Dumbo. We would have definitely done it. And because what you have to, and I mean, this is just one of the products of capitalism, of course. Some of these people are really getting opportunities, like, not even talking about Aladdin and the amount of like actual brown people playing brown people in this film, but even just, you know, like, and this sounds horrible because Michael Keaton doesn't need any help at all. But, you know, that was a really cool thing for him to get to do, is to be a part of Dumbo now, you know, like, and it's going to introduce. So the same way that, like, for instance, I learned who Robin Williams was through Mrs. Doubtfire. But like as an adult, you know, I would watch The Birdcage or this or that because I know who that person is.
Yeah.
And so I do think that there is something to be said for that sort of transference of artists in a way that helps to reintroduce things so that people can start to make those associations as they grow and develop and start to seek out, you know, media and things that are important to them on their own. I do think there's a direct connection between that ability and the amount of media with these same famous people in it.
Yeah, I see what you're saying there. It is cool to get to know, you know, or get to see like actors who you respect like get a pop like that from something big like that, something, you know, everybody's gonna
like
see.
Let me tell you, Mark Ruffalo getting cast in the freaking Avengers crap, I was like, finally someone's gonna watch him, someone's gonna see his movies, because like, I don't know, I wasn't like a super fan or anything, but I know Mark Ruffalo's name for like a decade prior to when he got on, I got closer to it,
no,
from like
fine.
A decade before he got on to the to be the Hulk, because they didn't have the Hulk for a minute because of the crap with Ed Norton or whatever. And so, you know, I'd known about him for years, and he'd always been doing, not always, but he did a lot of really cool indie stuff, and he's just been in a lot of really nice dramas prior to that. And of course he continues to do that now, but like him being brought to a completely new audience and the volume of that audience, I thought was really exciting. I mean, when I saw the first, it was the Avengers. It was the first Avengers movie where he was the Hulk.
I think that's the first one he played.
Because I'm be real, I didn't look up nothing ahead of time. I didn't care that much. So I didn't even know who was going to be the Hulk. I assumed it was going to be Ed Norton. I did not pay any attention. And when I saw him, I was like, I assume I was talking to my mother. I was like, Mama, do you know who that is? And she was like, the Hulk. I was like, yeah, okay.
You're not wrong.
But yeah, so I don't know. So that's the only true saving grace. And then of course, like we were talking about the new songs, giving some of these people an opportunity to create something new. Maybe, you know, he had even been thinking of this song back when maybe just couldn't make the cut. Probably not, but you never know. It couldn't make the cut of the original animated film or something like that. And this was a chance for him to give Jasmine a voice that he never got to, or maybe he thought about it a decade after it came out and he was like, dang, I really wish, you know, I'd let Jasmine actually have a little bit more of her own personality instead of just being like obstinate, because that's kind of how she plays in the animated one.
Yeah.
Not so much that she has so much conviction, but that she does not want to do, she doesn't want to lead the life that's been told to her she should lead.
Yeah. I will say that part of me does feel positively that Disney is actually like responding to criticisms of their material. And so they've actually like tried to go back and, you know, redress some of those grievances where they're like, well, let's, you know, change, you know, like I think Maleficent was probably the first, I think it was the first one that they did where they like completely changed the story and they're like, okay, well, let's make this
character. I didn't see it.
Okay.
I just wanted you to know.
Yeah. But they were like, let's sort of right the wrongs that we did to this character and like change the story as we know it to
give
like
her
fit more of a modern sensibility.
More.
Yeah. And then, you know, they did a little bit with, you know, the Jungle Book is.
Didn't see that either.
It's got.
Either one.
Yeah. The Jungle Book's got issue. I'll say like the original material of the Jungle Book has serious issues.
Like the book?
Like most of British colonialist literature. Like, yeah.
A Little Princess. If you have not read it or seen the film directed by Alfonso Cuarón, I used to love those. Okay, it's very problematic in some ways, but like I love that.
Yeah, I have seen that film. It's been a very long time now, but like, it does feel like Disney's kind of going back and being like, okay, like we know where we messed up. We're going to like change some things, like update it for a modern audience. Like you said, like giving Jasmine a voice or, you know, cut it, taking out the, you know, the,
without taking blame.
Yes.
Without that, taking blame
that,
though.
That's the part that I was getting to where I'm like, they are doing that, but they are doing it in one of the most like kind of devious ways possible where they're like, we're not going to say that we messed up. We're just going to change it to the new version.
Well, so I think that a lot of that has to do with the size and the scope of Disney as a company.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, these decisions over the years have been in the hands of lots of people, some of whom are dead, for instance, with like, you know, Peter Pan and stuff.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of people worked on Peter Pan who are no longer with us. And of course, there's stuff where they were responding to the social context that they were a part of, because obviously before the internet, it's still easy to do, but harder to do nowadays. But it was very easy, of course, besides the actual like legal segregation of communities, to keep yourself in your own bubble and to not even know that these other types of experiences existed or that your thoughts on something might be problematic, because you just did not even interact with that, you know.
Yeah. And it feels weird to say this, but like part of it is just the structure at the time was just people didn't see it as much, I guess. So like,
well, they didn't care to for the most part because it didn't come close enough to home where they ever felt any pain from it. They never saw any pain from it. They never experienced any pain from it. And so, you know, as times change and, you know, those people, oh, you know, my niece is married to a black man. And so now I'm thinking about the fact that, like, when we're driving down the street together, you know, if I get pulled over, he's like, oh, like, let me think. I think about this whole situation differently now because now someone that is close to me is showing me that there are different ways to experience these exact same, you know, scenarios.
Yeah. And I also think that the range of voices has expanded to where now it's easier to have a platform to get your voice out there and have your story told. And people are realizing, oh, these stories have always been happening. We just couldn't hear about them. And now you can, you know, and in some cases, there are some people's voices that we don't need to hear because, like we were saying with YouTube, like, hear any more from homophobes. So I want to go back for a second because we got off on another tangent. But I want to go back to what we were saying about Disney. Yeah. Let's reel it back in. I wanted to go back to what we were saying about Disney's sort of, I don't know, like, the performative wokeness of Disney, I guess we'll call it. Mm-hmm. Like, wokeness for the buck, I guess.
Partially for the buck. So, I mean, I do think that there's some integrity in there. Again, these are very large productions in a very large company with lots of people. So I'm sure that there is some good ethical, like, you know, I'm sure there's some truth behind it and that everybody that is a part of this decision-making process is not in it for a buck. But of course, yes, it is fiscally beneficial at the moment.
Yeah. but I will say that part of what worries me with all of this is the kind of, like, I don't know, the commodification of identities, and it's something that's been going on for a long time.
Like you're collecting cards.
Well, yeah, especially in the gay community, there's been a lot of outcry about the way that Pride has been sort of co-opted by a lot of corporations. And it's now, instead of a protest, which is what it started as, which Pride started as a protest, you know, for gay people to be seen as human beings by the rest of the world.
For brown queer people, specifically.
Absolutely. You know, it was basically started by, you know, trans women in New York and throwing bricks at the cops. And now it's, you know, Pride sponsored by, you know, X brand, Coca-Cola or whoever. And so a lot of what Disney's doing now feels like that to me. It feels like they are co-opting a space that used to be sort of a, I don't know, we'll call it like a revolutionary barricade, and they're, you know, throwing glitter on it and saying, this is our theme park now, you know? So and to a certain extent, history kind of does that with historical events a lot of times. Like, they will dress them up. You'll get, you know, musicals made about the French Revolution and whatnot, where it's like, this was a thing that where people died and, like, killed each other over ideas, but, like, now it's...
Well, all musicals really have a really depressing second act that usually has some death in it. Les Mis, of course, has a lot of sad stuff everywhere, if that's what
and weirdly enough, Les Mis is... It's not actually about the like, big moment of the
French actual
Revolution.
History.
It's a different part of the revolution than the one everybody thinks about. But mm-hmm. not to get off on Les Mis, what I'm worried about is that this is going to spread. It's going to, and the one example that kind of made me aware of how insidious this really was when I went to see, I was dating a Mexican woman when I was in LA, and we went to see Coco. And you know, she loved the movie, and I think it's a good movie too.
I fucking love Coco. I don't know what you're about to say, but
so I'm not gonna bag on Coco the movie. Coco the movie is a fine movie. The music in it is wonderful. I enjoy it, but the thing that I feel uneasy about is this idea that Disney can now say, okay, well, Dia de los Muertos is part of our theme park now, and it's Dia de los Muertos presented by Disney.
Oh, did you go to Disneyland? Is there...
No, but oh, that's what okay. I'm saying. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, they can technically do that because Coco is their intellectual property now, but are you taking away that iconography, that Dia de los Muertos iconography, and stamping Disney on it and saying, this is ours now?
I mean, I understand everything you're saying, but I would say that Disney's not doing it any more than every other American corporation has been doing for the past several decades.
And that's, I mean, that's part of the, I mean, the bigger trend that I'm talking about is, like, absolutely, like, capitalism does that. They will stamp their stamp on as many things as possible in order to sell them, you know, because nothing is valuable in capitalism unless it can be commodified and sold and turned into profit in some way. And so I'm a little hesitant about the way that Disney does this.
But you have to think, again, of the large scale of these projects and the number of people involved and the fact that the people who were a part of Coco, the vast majority of them, I would wager, felt that they were doing something, you know, very important and felt that they were bringing a voice that did not get a lot of attention to the mainstream, and again, specifically to children, which I'm gonna always go back to as an ultimately positive thing, is bringing different stories and different ways of being and different backgrounds, cultures to children. I'm gonna always view ultimately as positive because, like, for instance, when I'm teaching children and I would wear a wig, for instance, if a small child asks me about my hair, I will show them the wig cap. Like, I will be like, look, da 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 da, because there is a reason why a four-year-old has no idea, if they're especially a white child growing up in a white family, right? If you are 30 years old and you want to ask me about my hair, I'm much less inclined to say anything to you that's going to be positive or helpful or kind, probably, because you are no longer in that phase of life where you are absorbing all this information about the world. And at that point in life, there's a certain expectation that I would have, and I would hope that most people would have, that you could go look something up for yourself. Go try and figure it out for yourself, because we are in the internet age, we're in the information age. Like, it's just no reason for you to say really dumb, ignorant things to people, to their faces, in this day and age, unless you literally grew up in, like, some small town where everyone looked the same. And
or
even
under
then
a rock.
Yeah, but I mean, but even then, there were probably some people who acted a little bit differently, and you didn't quite know why. Yeah,
that rock,
and you could have just—that's what I'm saying. You could have just Googled then and be like, "Why is my friend like to do this all of the time, but no one else does?" And you probably could figure out an aspect of their identity that they were maybe keeping a little bit on the down low.
It's true. That stuff can be found out. You can also get some very, very bad information from the internet.
Well, that's true.
A lot of people have. I had a friend in LA who I made some joke about like Pizzagate, which is this crazy conservative conspiracy theory, if you don't know what it is, but
child sex ring
inside of a pizza shop. But she was like, I thought that was true, and I was like, oh no.
I mean, it's just so fantastical. Something like that is just so off the wall that, like, you just have to do your due diligence and, like, actually investigate that. If there's even a shred of doubt in your mind, like, that could be a true story, I feel like that is ridiculous enough to be like, let me go check some of these sources. You know, there's a difference between, you know, some crazy stuff happening and crazy but true, and things that sound crazy, and you just spend a minute and a half looking into it. Just like a minute and a half tops, and you probably know what's going on.
So to steer us back into Disney's Aladdin, 2019, directed by Guy Ritchie, which, again,
I like Guy Ritchie.
Well, we've got a British man making a movie about Middle Eastern people, so
I didn't really feel his
I didn't really feel
his personality in it.
So I was gonna say, of the the Disney live action remakes that I've seen, I could not tell you the personalities of the directors that directed them whatsoever. I do not remember who directed Maleficent. I know Jon Favreau directed Jungle Book, but I couldn't tell you any of his personalities in that movie at all.
Jungle Book, consequently, Disney can't hold on to completely because
it's a public domain property.
Right, yeah. Because of how old the book is.
Same with Peter Pan. Peter Pan is public domain. So if anybody
Alice Through the Looking Glass.
Yes, Alice in Wonderland, yeah. Public domain. Hey, guys. No, wait, don't make another Alice in Wonderland movie. Now that I think about it, don't.
There's plenty.
Tim Burton tried that. It didn't go well.
It was gross. I'm sorry, I did not enjoy either one of those, and for some reason I saw both.
Somebody could make a good Alice in Wonderland movie.
The thing is that Alice in Wonderland is a story that we are all so familiar with at this point that no one is saying anything new in the realm of Alice in Wonderland.
That's the thing, though, is that I feel like we are familiar with the Disney version of Alice in Wonderland. We're familiar
with... There was a television show?
I'm familiar with that television show.
Where she walked through the mirror?
Yes. I'm familiar with that television show. And a lot of weird... It's been a very long time since I've seen it. A lot of weird stuff happens in that one.
I used to
love watching it.
Then. Yeah, I loved that.
I used to love the song.
Because there were more... You got to see them more in a day-to-day. And you got to see different aspects of the personalities of the caterpillar, of the Cheshire Cat.
And I love the song where... I can't remember who plays. I can't remember what the character's name is, but she says, "Jam tomorrow, jam yesterday, but never ever jam today." And I was like, "That song is going to be stuck in my head forever,
for life,
forever." Yes, I will never forget that song. to steer back into what we were saying, you said that overwhelmingly positive. For children to get to see that representation. I agree. Representation is important.
As long as it's fair.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. But I still feel uneasy about it being under that umbrella of we own all of this Disney.
So you can't stop the actual, executive board of Disney from protecting their assets. That they're going to do that group of individual people is going to do that. They hold the ultimate power within the organization, but they bring in so many people nowadays. As long as you get kind of famous,
ultimately what needs to happen is the overthrow of capitalism. That's what I'm saying. Once we overthrow capitalism, we'll all have access to
We're in a mixed economy. I don't think that America, even though it says it's capitalistic, is 100% capitalistic in a lot of areas. We have a mixed economy, but yes, the overall tenets of capitalism the concept of competition and this and that and stuff, it's just not real.
Part of the problem, I think, is this this idea of just privatization of everything. That's the thing that the United States does worse than almost everywhere else, where so many major world powers have nationalized healthcare. The simplest first step, if we could just nationalize healthcare, you could start on the path to making things better. But we just refuse. We refuse to give up, the fucking minefield that is privatized healthcare.
Well, yeah, because again, there's this overarching feeling in the country, whether or not people really even examine their feelings or know why they feel this way, that if everybody can do it, then they're going to make the best product for the consumer because the consumer uses their money to decide. But when I had a seizure and spent one night in the hospital. I had a CAT scan, I had an MRI, and I probably had an IV, and I had some hospital food. That was $19,000.
That's a lot of money.
It was less than 48 hours, and at the end of it, they couldn't tell me anything about why I'd had a seizure. They couldn't find anything neurologically wrong with me. I've never had a seizure since. No one thinks anything is wrong with me, but...
And that's been a while, too.
Yeah, that was...
I remember that. It was like 2010, wasn't it?
It was 9 years ago, at least.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my mother worked at the hospital. I had very good health insurance because I was on my mother's health insurance. So I ended up only paying, you know, like $1,700 or something like that. But still, the fact of the matter is somebody paid $19,000 for me to spend one night and have two tests. Ultimately, is the majority of what it is. And it's not about the cost of labor. It's not about the cost of supplies, you know, talking about the medical industry specifically. None of those things are things like Tylenol. You know, I've watched a lot of stuff on people who want to have a baby. They want to figure out what hospital they want to have their baby at. And you can't get any itemized information ahead of time from any of them. And after the fact, like, your Tylenol, like, not your real painkillers, your Tylenol costs hundreds of dollars. Tylenol that you could have bought at the drugstore for $2.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah.
It's just obvious that capitalism doesn't actually work.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing, too, I think, is that, like, part of it is this, it's part of it is like culture based, like the United States itself seems to have, it's very specific to the United States, this mindset of
bootstrap,
like,
mentality.
Yeah, like, I got mine, why can't you get yours? Basically, that's what the way people see it. And then we also have this sort of like cult of wealth where we're like, oh, well, people who have a lot of money must be, you know, smart.
Special?
Or hardworking. Yeah, or like they must be better.
They did something
than people without
better
money.
Than me.
And the fact of the matter is that majority of the time it's just dumb luck.
It's like
luck. It's like, oh, you
it's
happen to be.
It's a lottery. It's a life lottery.
It's like you just happen to be in the right place at the right time.
You just happen to be conceived, Blue Ivy. So what I want to say is, you know, score one for the little man when Beyonce, and listen, I love Beyonce, but when Beyonce tried to copyright Blue Ivy's name for, you know, whatever future monetary stuff she wanted to do with her daughter, that's one of the few cases where the court ruled against her, and whatever that small, I can't remember if it was a photography company or if it was a floral company, but it was some company that had been operating under the name Blue Ivy for like years and years and years before Beyonce ever got pregnant, and they won the lawsuit, and she could not trademark the name because their trademark was established enough. And you know, so there'll be some small instances of things like that happening. And I mean, let's be real, Beyonce is a very powerful person in our capitalist society. There's a whole lot she can get away with. But that one little thing, you know, so I mean, I think that overall what you're looking at is more people need to study the law. That's my ultimate. Okay. More people need to study the law. More people need to become judges. Depending on where you are, you don't have to be a lawyer to be a judge. So, like, there's some dumb people in a lot of courtrooms. And that's where a lot of these decisions actually get made. The legislation, you know, can be challenged in the courts and things like that. And so that, to me, is where I think people should be focusing their efforts on a large scale. The same with criminal justice reform is attacking these government positions and getting people in there who
a lot of political organizing needs to happen, and a lot of people need to be educated in how to organize politically. And it's hard, and it's, you know, you need like vanguard parties in order to educate people to say this.
And
you
need notoriety, and you need to not be black unless you want to be killed.
Well,
I'm just saying, a lot of black activists coming up dead right now.
You are absolutely correct.
So I just want everyone listening, if you are black, be prepared. It's
careful.
Fight the good fight.
Yeah.
We support you. But, you know, I do want to warn you. Some people out there more than don't have your best interest in mind.
Yeah. So, Disney's Aladdin 2019. where did we go off?
Let me tell you where I saw Guy Ritchie a tiny, tiny bit. One jump ahead.
Okay.
My second favorite song, favoritist in Aladdin, One Jump Ahead. Love it. Love it. Such a good song. Such a good sequence. Even with the prostitutes. You know, whatever. I didn't know what that was.
Look, sex work is work, okay?
I didn't know what I didn't even know what was going on. Yeah. I was just like, these ladies are like, Aladdin, you don't got any money. You need to leave.
Yeah, fair. That's fair. I mean, they have the right to refuse your services.
That is the only thing that I knew when I was little. Nowadays, yes, I understand that they were like, you don't have any money. You can't afford this, like, leave. But that aspect, they're not obviously sex workers in the new one. Like, they could be. They're just some ladies on the thing. And Will Smith does go in there, like, when he does the Arabian thing in Wild Wild West. You remember that?
Oh my gosh.
Where he was making all of those noises.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like that because he's got that high ponytail. Like
spinning tassels.
Yes. Yeah. That was a lot.
Lord. Wild Wild West is a wow.
So another problematic movie that I love. Like love. An
absurdly problematic
movie. I'm just going to give you all my favorite parts whenever we talk about a movie that's not related to Aladdin. She goes, get out of my way, get out of my way, U.S. Army, U.S. Marshal. And that is when she is got her little opera glasses and she's lip reading Will Smith and Kevin Kline arguing with one another about who has jurisdiction. Anyway, it's still fun. It's still fun. It's got a lot of problems, but it's still fun. It's fun. Fun times. The 90s or early 2000s, whenever that was. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was 99. Cisco was still hot.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was all of Drew Hill.
Was it all of Drew Hill?
I believe so. I think it was after Cisco had a solo album, but I think that they all together made that song with Will Smith.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
Don't quote me.
I thought Enter the Dragon came out in 2000. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
I don't know. I know that I was young.
Yeah.
To be singing about thongs.
It's true. Cisco was a thing for a minute there.
Yeah, he was.
The thong song was everywhere. In like 2000.
And it was they had the MTV behind the video.
Oh yeah, with Joseph Kahn. I remember that being the first time I saw Joseph Kahn, and I was like, who is this nerd? And he's awesome.
Let's put
honestly.
Baby oil. Let's put baby oil on everybody. Everybody needs to be shiny. But anyway, sorry. So one step ahead, one jump ahead, whatever the name of the song is. That sequence, there's a lot of cuts in there and there's a lot of motion in there that feels much more Guy Ritchie than basically any other aspect of the film. Just now with the knowledge that he directed it.
Slow-mo?
Not that I recall.
That was a big thing for him for his first few movies where he did. And even in like Sherlock Holmes, he does a lot of slow motion.
Well, it's a lot of detail. Just a lot of detail work that the Aladdin story does not lend itself to. So, yeah, no. So that's why, again, I didn't even really realize he had directed it because his normal things that I see from him weren't really in it. But they were a little bit in that one sequence. The issue that I had with that sequence is that they had him singing as if he was actually running through a market. And so sometimes he sounded like out of breath. Sometimes he was like talk singing. And it really worked my nerves for some reason. I don't know why it did. It was like the realism that they were going for pissed me off. Because I'm like, there's genies, guys. Like, it's still it's still a fairy tale. Like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. That. Makes sense to me. I mean, if it's a musical, like, have him sing
beautifully.
Let him sing. Yeah, let him sing. Let his angel's voice fly. Like.
Yes. Because I'm like, when Jasmine sang her two songs, she was basically still.
Yeah, we're not she here wasn't for a gritty moving Aladdin reboot.
So that she could, you know, get all of her beautiful notes out. You could see the beautiful expressions on her face and stuff. And yeah, so that was my issue with that sequence. But it goes through the marketplace in a really pretty way that there probably was a lot of green screen and stuff in there that I just wasn't paying that much attention to because it was moving kind of fast. And also I was listening for words to be changed, which there were.
Of course. Gotta have something new in there.
Well, and Will Smith is black through most of the movie, also, for reference. So he is, as the genie, the blue thing with the giant bald spot. It's much less pronounced when he's just being a normal person. I don't know why they added that extra forehead space for when he's blue. I don't understand it. Like, you just up the scale in general, but proportionately.
Weird. Maybe they just wanted him to look less human when he's a genie, I guess. I don't know.
Maybe so. But for the majority of the movie, he just looks like...
just Will Smith.
Will Smith with the ponytail on his head.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So it's fine. Doesn't look crazy.
Well, I think we've gone all over the map on this one. And I think it's a pretty thorough discussion. I'm going to have to figure out what to keep in and what to cut out here.
You should just clip in some, like, music from the movie. Like,
I'll just clip in a whole new world or underneath.
You know, just, like, just go in and out. Like, so just, like, put it in an order where, like, whatever we're talking about
topics.
Is themed. You know, it's, like, themed around the song.
Indescribable opinions.
That's not... So, but like, you know, when I'm saying the riff-raff street rap part earlier, you know, and we're talking about capitalism, you could just play that in the background, you know?
I'm sure there's a metaphor in there somewhere we can connect. But yeah, this was very good. This was longer than the last one, but...
are you going to see it?
Aladdin, not until it comes out somewhere besides the theater.
I did not see Dumbo or Cinderella or the second Cinderella or Maleficent, nor do I plan to see the next Maleficent.
Is the second Cinderella?
I'm pretty sure there were two.
Huh. Weird. I don't remember that.
But I have seen Aladdin and Beauty and the Beast, but that was because we had watched whatever that horror movie was with the red door in the post-apocalyptic.
The red door?
Is a red door in it, and this family comes in. They're like... in a little room. It's maybe Joel Edgerton, maybe. Doesn't matter. It was a scary movie, so I made us see Beauty and the Beast right afterwards. Grossly disappointed in that.
Oh, yeah. Definitely disliked that movie the most. I think the thing that I disliked about it the most was that the Beast looked absolutely terrible. And the problem was that a lot of the jokes concerning the Beast in that movie are based on his facial expressions, because the beast is extremely expressive in the animated version.
Yeah,
they make a lot out of, especially the joke where they're like, stand up straight, show us a pretty face.
It comes at night.
Show us a smile. And he goes, and he gives that crazy smile. Yeah. But when he did it in this one, he was just like, I was like, what? The joke is done.
Well, like, he wasn't ferocious at all in it either. My biggest problem with Beauty and the Beast was Disney has all of this money. It's not abnormal. What is the word? It's not abnormal for, in one of the animated films, for there to be a speaking voice and a singing voice. If you put all of your Disney money behind voice lessons for Emma Watson, and that's still what she sounds like, someone else needs to record the songs. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's not that big of a deal. I don't think anyone's feelings would have been hurt.
Yeah, that authenticity buck definitely needs to be thrown out in those cases. Like, I think Disney has always... They're still burned by what happened with Julie Andrews and My Fair Lady, or they saw what happened with My Fair Lady, that backlash, because people really didn't like that Audrey Hepburn got cast as Eliza Doolittle and then had someone, you know, dub her over in the movie. And I think they just...
Fun fact. Would you like one?
Sure.
Because in My Fair Lady, her last name is Doolittle, and whoever that man is, who I can't remember right now, is in Dr. Doolittle also. for like 45 minutes the first time I watched My Fair Lady, because it came on like PBS or something, I thought I was watching Dr. Dolittle. And I was like, where are the animals?
Yeah. Yeah. You're talking about Rex Harrison.
Yeah. 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 Yes. Yes.
Very funny. what a mistaken identity.
All right. But well, Julie Andrews is a queen, so.
I mean, they're both great. I don't know.
Well, for different, right.
We should never have to choose between Julie Andrews and Audrey Hepburn, honestly. Like, they're both fantastic. Julie Andrews was an angel, and Audrey Hepburn was a total badass who, you know, survived Nazi occupation in, I think, Holland. I think that's where she grew up. But yeah, or Belgium, maybe. One of those. Oh my gosh! Now I'm being now I'm being the
just cut in later. Yeah, like go Google
the,
it.
I'll and... just cut in the correct country that she was from. but yeah, I think we have nailed it, as we say on the podcast.
Nailed the coffin.
No, the topic. We hit the nail
on the topic
on the head.
It's a different idiom.
We've also hit several other nails around it.
Like whack-a-mole.
Yes, we have done a little whack-a-mole on this episode. but I had fun. I think this was a good discussion. I hope you had fun in your first podcasting experience.
Well, I have so many thoughts.
Well, you are more than welcome to come back and give us more thoughts on another movie if you want to.
Well, here's what we'll do. We'll find out if people think that my thoughts are interesting or just really frustrating, and then that'll tell me what to do.
Well, we don't have many listeners, so our feedback's not great.
To get some social media, buddy.
Well,
use this capitalistic structure that's built for you.
I wish I knew how to make things go viral on social media, but that is not a thing that I am good at.
Do you want, you know, so like since I left Lifetime, this is completely not related to any of this, but you know, like a lot of people know me now. Like, okay. not to sound obnoxious, but like a lot of people know who I am now because I was there for so long.
When I put the episode out,
I'll
give you the link and you can share it.
On my Lifetime Facebook.
Yeah.
Because my real Facebook and my Lifetime Facebook are separate.
You can share it on whatever platform you want. You'll be like, hey,
look, guys, listen to me be so smart. Did you ever know that I had so many thoughts in my brain?
That'll be great. I may have to trim this episode down though, because we're at an hour 20 right now, and I usually try and keep it under an hour for these.
So. Well, you know.
But I'm gonna do a little sign off here, and we can continue talking.
No.
Afterwards.
Just kidding. No.
Yeah.
So, I don't know how to sign off.
Yeah. No, you don't have to do anything. Okay. This is just for me. So if you enjoy listening to this discussion, you can find us at www.fancyfilmfellows.com. We're also on iTunes, we're on Stitcher, we're on whatever, you know, podcast site you use to aggregate all of your podcasts. We're on there, probably. At least FeedBurner tells me we should be. We're also on Spotify. If you want to listen to us on Spotify, just look for Fancy Film Fellows. We're there. And, you know, leave a rating. Give us a review. Bump us up that chart.
Leave a comment.
Yeah. I mean, a good comment. Don't leave
saying
any bad
how much
comments.
You loved it.
Don't leave any bad comments. Get out of here with bad comments.
We only want constructive negatives. Yeah. So if it's like, I don't like the sound of your voice, not helpful.
Yeah. Get it out of here. We can't change that. Sorry. We are who we are.
Get a voice box.
I'll put a vocoder in it. All right. Well, thank you for listening, and we will see you next time.